My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Good morning and a very happy 2024 to everybody out there, whether you're listening on the radio, listening on the free Odyssey app, or hanging out with us in the chatty house on ESPN 1320 TV, youtube.com/ESPN 1320. You can find us there, twitch.tv/ESPN 1320. You can find us there as well. As always, we're taking your comments in the chatty house. So get in there and talk with us. James, happy new year to you and to your family and your loved ones. That's the only time I'm going to say this. There's all this debate about like, hey, when do you say happy new year? When do you stop? Today. That's it. I'm done after today.
I don't know. Like, I think I'm just going to say Happy New Year for like the next month just to like get under your skin.
I hate it.
Just like walk around. Happy New Year to the lady at Starbucks, and then we'll go to Jamba and I'll say Happy New Year.
Oh, I can't wait to loudly disagree. Say, actually, you know what? We're 2 weeks in and it sucks. Like, it's the thing. It's like, today's the second. We're all back at work. We're all, hey, yeah, good to see you. Yeah. If you want to say, hey, how was your New Year? How was your holidays? That's fine.
Yeah.
Just, hey, Happy New Year to you. Like, dude, we're 72 hours in. Let's get this thing rolling. Fast starts out here.
I'm just glad we don't write checks anymore. Like, I mean, I guess my wife writes a check every once in a while, but because checks you have to change the date in your head.
Oh, yeah.
And how many times you put the wrong date and then you can't have a check that's a year old. And then you're like, oh, either you got to like scribble it out and sign it, like, and then put your initial.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know when the next time is I'll write the year because I don't typically do that anymore, Kyle.
Yeah, I don't think I do when I'm writing, like 2023 season, 2024 season, but that won't come into play until well into 2024, so it won't be a problem.
Okay.
It's not like in school when you had to date, you had to write your name on the paper and you had to write the date on the paper, and for the first month and a half, you're battling between 1999 or 2000. No.
See, that's what's nice about the NBA. I do the 02-03 or the 03-04 right. Season.
You've been on that 2024 kick since October.
Covers everything.
Yeah, good for you, man.
Yeah.
You're well ahead of the curve. Yeah, I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to worry about any of that until next season. But welcome to 2024, everybody. Hope that everybody had a great holiday and that everybody got into the new year safely, soundly, and on a high note. And let's keep the notes high. The Kings they haven't started in 2024 yet, but they closed out 2023 in style with a 117-110 win over the Atlanta Hawks, and then a 123-92 win over the Grizzlies. Meanwhile, the 49ers, on their last game of 2023, they beat the Washington Commanders 27-10, then got a little bit of help from the Arizona Cardinals, who downed the Philadelphia Eagles 34-31 out in Philadelphia. Pretty amazing game there. And that secured the number one overall seed for the 49ers. They can now rest in week 18 before they get the bye. They get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Huge weekend for the 49ers. Big weekend for the Kings. I want to dive deep into the 49ers in a bit, but with the Kings, James, I thought we saw the not two best versions, but two very different wins for them, where they come back from 23 down against Atlanta in the first quarter. They're down 18 at the half. They come back and win it 117-110. But then they had a game against the Grizzlies where they win by 31 and just kind of dominated from start to finish. Which of those wins is better for you?
I don't know, to be honest with you. It's kind of like a weird buildup. You lose a bad game in Portland. Mm-hmm. You look like the same team that lost in Portland for the first, 20 minutes of the Atlanta game.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden you crank it up and you're this great team. And then you get to the next game and there's carryover from that.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's a weird carryover from one game to the next where either they're really good or they're really bad, and sometimes trying to figure out who they are in the middle. I think the one thing I will point out, they're 19-12. It's the first time that they've walked in. It's the best record they've had since the 2004-05
wow.
season. So when they walked into 05,
golly,
this is the best record that they've had, 7 games over .500, but 19-12. And like, look, you can't take that away from them. And then you look at the games ahead, mm-hmm, and it's easy to see how they could actually start accumulating some space here and maybe get to 10 games over .500. So
yeah,
2-1 road trip. It's not the two wins I would have expected. Especially the Grizzlies game, I thought would be more competitive.
Yeah, the Grizzlies have been playing well since Ja got back.
Well, they were, and then he missed a game, and then he came back for a game, and they had lost those two games. So now they've lost three in a row,
mm-hmm,
and they look like a team that got like that new coach, that new head coach, like bump that we talked about with,
yeah,
Antonio Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
But they got that with Ja Morant coming back, and then that's run its course. Now it's like, who are we? How do we get together here? How do we figure this thing out with no Steven Adams? How do we figure it out with, you know, Marcus Smart there and no Dylan Brooks? Because this is the first time Ja Morant's really played with this group of players, and I thought it was really, really obvious that they were just a collection of pieces that had no identity yet at all.
Yeah, that's very much what you and I talked about this extensively.
Yeah.
Like, man, even when Ja gets back, the Grizzlies are not... They would need to, without Ja Morant, somehow be .500,
mm-hmm,
to be competitive once he got back into the lineup, and they're just not. And Ja Morant is not the type of player... I think Ja Morant is very good, but he's not the type of player that is going to go... He's not... There's not that many of these guys in NBA history who are just going to come back and be like, all right, team, get on my back. We're going to win 12 in a row here. We're going to get back into the mix right away. Let's get this thing rolling. Like, he's a good player, but he's not a franchise altering. What were they when it, before he came back, 6-19?
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to make them 19-6 in their next 25.
No, I mean, maybe. I mean, you got to look at last year. They were, what, the number two seed in the West?
Sure, but no, but that was with a very different collection of players.
No, that's true.
There's no, I mean, you have, Dylan Brooks is gone. You just mentioned Steven Adams, who's a big piece for them. Brandon Clark is a big piece for them. You're, mm-hmm, still trying to integrate Marcus Smart, who's been in and out of the lineup. You lose Tyus Jones.
That's a big one.
Who was a big piece for them. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a new batch of players here that they've got to mesh and get everything figured out. And now they're at a spot the Grizzlies are where they're 10-22. They have to go 31-19 to finish .500.
Oh, that's not good.
They have to go 12 games over just to finish .500.
You know, Kyle, the crazy thing is too, we talked about like this weird road trip, right?
Yeah, it's very strange.
So you start in Portland where you get Anfernee Simons. And, you know, I think Simon he's very similar to what we saw from from Trae Young.
Mm.
But the DeJounte Murray thing, like, we talked extensively about DeJounte Murray last week because it's like, well, what if he becomes available, right?
Mm-hmm. It sounds like I think he is.
I think it's very likely that he is too. But I watched him play and I wasn't overly impressed, and like a lot of dribbling, a lot of like spin moves that don't make any sense.
Sure.
And it's almost like he's a lower version of Ja Morant. And I think it kind of prepared the Kings a little bit, because it was a lot of the same spin moves. It was a lot of the same like herky jerky motion, trying to force things. The difference is that Ja Morant can go jump over a Kia and DeJounte Murray can't. And I'd say DeJounte Murray plays a little bit better defense, but still the style of player. I think while the road trip was weird and three time zones and all that stuff, it did one game kind of set you up for the next game with, mm-hmm. you know, unique players that you've got a like game plan for. And I'm not saying that Simons is, you know, Trey Young, but sure. that style of player that just shoots from anywhere at any time and does these crazy things. He's not the passer that Trey Young is. But I think it just kind of like the buildup. It's like, okay, how do we defend this?
Yeah, that very ball dominant scoring guard.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
I want to put a pin in the DeJounte Murray thing because I definitely have some thoughts after watching him against Sacramento. Last thing on the Grizzlies.
Yep.
There is not a more fraudulent basketball player in the National Basketball Association than Jaren Jackson Jr.
Oh.
He stinks. I don't mean stinks. He doesn't stink. Let me take that back. That was strong. He is not nearly as good. If you never watched the Grizzlies and you only consumed like NBA content, podcasts and reading and stuff, you would think that Jaren Jackson Jr. is one of the like five or six best bigs in the NBA. And he is just not, man. He wants to be a guard so bad. And I just do not believe in the Grizzlies as long as he is just their anchor in the middle.
Yeah, 18 points and 3 rebounds. Like, at what point?
What is his problem with Team USA too?
Yeah, he just wants to shoot threes, and I get it. I mean, that's kind of the way the league has gone, but it's a tough watch, man. He looks a lot different with Steven Adams there, like mm-hmm. because Steven Adams will anchor the middle,
right.
and he can come in for all these weak side chop blocks and stuff. Mm-hmm. I've kind of felt the same way. I think if you put him next to Sabonis.
Sure.
He would be incredible. Like, we would sit here and go, oh my gosh, look how good he is, because he is that shot blocking. He's kind of what you need.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of times we always were looking for the piece that fits with Sabonis or the piece that fits with Steven Adams, and we're not thinking that Jaren Jackson also needs that piece.
Yeah.
You know? And that's why I think, look at the young tandem in Houston and how good those guys can be with Şengün and Jabari Smith Jr.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of the same type of player. It's kind of like young Sabonis and Jaren Jackson sitting right there.
Yeah. 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 I think that's the ideal. But man, I have not been impressed at any point with Jaren Jackson over the last season and a half, two seasons.
No.
And maybe it is. Maybe it's just a product of Steven Adams being out. And like we talk about with Sabonis as a defender, maybe Jaren Jackson is just miscast in his role a little bit, and they're just kind of missing that additional piece. But I'm out for the time being.
Yeah, he's certainly not an
all-star. Three rebounds or 7 foot.
Yeah, he's certainly not an all-star.
You can't go get more than 3 boards, man?
Yeah.
Come on.
Anyways, come on.
I'm just out on him.
All right.
I think it's partly because of the Team USA stuff. That started it, and then this year has been very, very telling. Because when Ja is out, you're expecting a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr. to step up and be like, okay, I'm going to be the guy. I'm going to help this team win some games. And they just didn't. He just didn't.
Yeah, and I mean, keep in mind, his shot blocking last year, you know, his Defensive Player of the Year, which I didn't see at all in this game, 118 at home and 71 on the road.
Yeah.
Like, he got some positive vibes there.
Home cooking.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I just needed
to get that off my chest.
Okay.
All right. Big weekend for the 49ers. They not only got a win in Washington, but they secured the number one seed. What does that mean for them? What does the team look like coming out of week 17? And then a couple of notes from that game as well. That's all coming up. And the 49ers did an NFL first.
Oh?
Yeah. They did something this year that has never been done in NFL history. We'll talk about that next on The Insider. Sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2. Sacramento's sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Plenty of Kings talk coming up. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're going to talk about a big weekend for the 49ers. They had everything they needed to go their way after a disastrous week 16 where they get smoked at home by the Baltimore Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
and their star quarterback, Brock Purdy, throws four interceptions. And they just look like, oh boy, they are reeling. They get some help from the officials on Saturday night when they botched the Detroit Lions two-point conversion call. Then they got some help from Dan Campbell when he decided not to just kick the extra point and to try again.
That was some straight-up buffoonery.
7 yards out.
Just ridiculously stupid. The entire sequence was dumb. Like, I feel for him because clearly the guy went and like, checked
in. Yeah, the refs hosed it.
Yeah, it's a total mistake on the officials.
Yeah.
But when that happens, like, to go for it from the seven, then to get bailed out on a call, and then to, just, like, the whole thing. Man, just kick the extra point. Like,
the funniest part about all that, I am with you. We are in lockstep on all that. I thought Dan Campbell terribly mismanaged that game after they got screwed. And like I said, this is not the Lions did everything right. They got the right play. They should have had the conversion. Now, granted, if they had announced number 68, maybe the Cowboys cover it differently, but it doesn't matter. Anyways, the last 2-point conversion try was there. If Jared Goff makes any kind of good throw, tight end catches it and walks in.
Yeah.
But he left it outside. He left it low. The guy had to try and dive for it, and then he drops it. But even if he had caught it, he wasn't going to get in. So just a wild ending to that game. It helped the 49ers because they needed Detroit to lose and they needed Philly to lose.
Mm-hmm.
The Niners go win their game against the Commanders. And then just a few minutes after, there were players in the tunnel after the game watching
that was the action spectacular.
Unfold. Yeah, it was really cool. Watching that action unfold in the Cardinals game. Because the Cardinals came back and beat Philadelphia in Philly, clinches the number one seed for the 49ers. And of all the things that they needed, I think getting a week 18 to rest, where it sounds like Kyle Shanahan is planning on resting some guys, but then getting the bye week where they get an additional week off to get some guys healthy, that to me, like, forget home field, forget anything, that matters more than anything, because I told you this during the game. With the way they looked against Washington,
mm-hmm.
prior to Tre'Davious Ward's interception that kind of just flipped the game around, but Washington was driving in to make that a 3-point game in the second half.
I thought they were just in cruise control.
They did not look great.
No. I thought they just walked in that game knowing that they're going to win no matter what,
mm-hmm.
and they were just in cruise control. And I mean, that's not what you want to see. It's a little embarrassing to do that,
mm-hmm.
but I felt like the coach was coaching, and I don't think the players were, like, not playing hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't think that they had that little bit of extra juice that comes with a big game.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And then there's the Monday night to Sunday 10 a.m. kickoff on the opposite side of the country tournament.
Yeah.
Like, I expected it to be a little bit sloppy early, and they were much better. Like I said, Tre'Davious Ward got that interception, and that was basically the ball game from that point forward. Washington never really got anything going again. But you're watching that game and you're going, man, Philly's going to beat, because at that point it looked like Philly was going to beat Arizona.
Yeah.
Arizona was going in. It was 7-3. They throw a pick six. Kyler Murray does a 99-yard pick six.
Mm.
And then they get a field goal. Philly answers with a touchdown. It's 21-6. And you're going, all right, this game's over. Arizona's got nothing for these guys, which would have made week 18 a must win for the 49ers. And you're going, man, they look beat up. They look out of gas.
Yep.
Christian McCaffrey's getting his calf worked on the sideline. Like, this is a mess. They're going to lose to L.A. because L.A. is playing well, and the 49ers are clearly not. And they're going to wind up having to play in that first weekend of the playoffs. No bye. They're going to be super beat up. It turned out not to be the case.
Yeah, I was more concerned with the McCaffrey situation.
Yeah.
Like, even before they pan to the sidelines and someone's, like, has his sock pulled down and trying to work on his calf muscle, I was like, I hit you up. I'm like, what is Shanahan doing?
A lot of touches.
He was at 16 touches already. And it's like, what are you really, in week 17, are you going to hit this guy for like 35 to 40 touches in a game? Like, what exactly is your problem?
Yeah.
Like, do you not understand that you still have another like 5 weeks to play?
It felt very much like they were trying to put them away early. Like, the Niners were very much trying to go up by a few scores in the first half so they could, you know, pull Christian McCaffrey for most of the fourth quarter or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it just did not work.
I guess, but at the same time, I mean, maybe they were trying to get him his stats so he broke 2,000 yards.
Boy, I would really hate that if that was the case.
I don't know. The whole time I was sitting there, it was cringy. I was like, what are they doing? And sure enough, he ends up on the sidelines with a calf injury. Hopefully it's nothing. They say it's nothing. The MRI says it's like a very minor calf strain.
Yeah.
But like, look, this guy has a long, long history of injury, and he's been durable for the 49ers, but... You know, like, use your head in that situation.
Yeah, they've already ruled him out for week 18, which is not a surprise. It sounds like Eric Armstead, they're not going to try and push him back into action for week 18. He's got knee and foot stuff, so they'll try and give him another couple weeks to see if they can get him right, and they need him for the postseason. You put that down in the rundown. His absence has been glaring in the run game. I totally agree with you. They're very lucky that they got up a couple of scores on Washington and didn't allow Washington to just get behind Brian Robinson, their running back.
Yeah.
Because he was cooking.
Yeah, I mean, I think that might be the roadmap to beating the 49ers,
mm-hmm.
is that specific issue. Just try to beat
power
them up.
Power run game.
Yeah, power run game. You know, if you want to sort of negate, take away Nick Bosa and the pass rush, just run right at that whole side. Like,
yeah.
And I think that it's been pretty productive when that does happen. The problem is the Niners usually put up a couple of touchdowns, and you can't just rely on the run game the whole time.
Yeah.
This isn't like 1985 football. Yeah,
sure.
So I think it's just sort of the way that the league is changing and morphing. But getting not only the bye week, but getting a week 18 basically off.
A second bye if they want.
It's a second bye, realistically. Yeah. And so that just, it will help. Especially, I mean, we're not going to see Trent Williams at all, I guarantee. Like, there's no way they're running Trent Williams out there in week 18.
That's what I was going to ask you. So Kyle Shanahan, immediately after the game on Sunday, is like, yeah, we'll probably rest some guys.
Yeah.
And then on Monday in his conference call was like, we still got to work that out with the coaches. There's still some stuff we need to work on. Got to have a good week of practice. So I get that. And I get you have to suit up 46 guys. Like, you can't rest literally everybody. But Trent Williams, no chance. Armstead and Christian McCaffrey already out.
Yeah.
I think a guy like Brock Purdy, probably not playing.
I'd give him a quarter, maybe a half, just depending on how the offensive line's holding up. If offensive line is not holding up, then bail on that.
So that's my caveat to the Trent Williams thing. If you're rolling Brock Purdy out there, Trent Williams has to play.
Yeah.
You can't roll, and it may not even be Jalen Moore, the backup left tackle, because he's in concussion protocol.
Yeah.
So I don't want to put Purdy behind anything other than the starting offensive line. So if Trent Williams doesn't play, I don't think Brock Purdy plays.
Okay.
And like you said, if they do, maybe a couple series, just treat it like a preseason game, just get him out to run a couple things that you want to work on and call it good. But
yeah, I'm
not running that risk, man. With their injury problems at quarterback, that's not a risk I'm running.
Well, I'd also like to see Sam Darnold get some run.
Sure.
Because what if you do need him and he hasn't hardly played at all season?
Yeah.
Like, what if you do need him in the playoffs? Like, get
the
guy out there. Like, let him stretch his legs. Let him get some confidence, find a rhythm. But he can't be out there with no running back, with, you know.
Sure.
The other guy that I would sit is Kittle. I mean,
yeah,
he took that shot.
I thought his knee was gone. Like,
yeah.
The way, like, that's usually guys to make a catch, jumps to make a catch, and then gets hit low as he's coming down. I that feels like it's a blown out knee every single time. The timing was just right on it.
He was lucky his toes didn't catch a turf and stick.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really lucky. And I also, like, they didn't really talk about that much. That felt dirty. Like, that whole, that sequence there, like, they kind of high-load the dude. But he was, I didn't understand that at all. Like,
I think it's two guys trying to make a play.
Maybe.
Really,
the guy came in really, really low, so on the tackle. And I guess that's what you do, but...
But yeah, because if he tries to hit him high, he's getting a penalty.
Yeah. No, that's true.
So, yeah, I don't... Kittle probably doesn't play. Debo might play a little bit. Like, they got to suit up receivers, so Debo might play a little bit, but I don't think he gets a ton of run.
Yeah.
Dre Greenlaw's another guy who's been dealing with injuries. I think if you're going to sit a linebacker, I think he's the one you sit.
It just gives him that little bit of time,
so
man, to really refresh and reboot and make sure that they're ready to roll for the playoffs. So I think it's just, it wasn't just winning, just getting a bye week. It was getting two, and that's huge for a team heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, 100%. And if they make a deep run, that's going to be the reason why.
Because
making a deep run without that first-round bye was going to be really, really difficult given the spot they were in. So if all of their starters sit, who we just talked about, Trent Williams, Debo Samuel, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, Brock Purdy, the 49ers still, in just 16 games, so I didn't even need the extra 17th game to get here, they're the first team ever with a 4,000-yard passer, a 2,000-yard all-purpose back, a wide receiver and tight end with 1,000 yards receiving, and then another wide receiver, two wide receivers and a tight end, all with 1,000 all-purpose yards.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I read that wrong, but you get it.
That's wild.
It's crazy. The amount of weapons they have acquired and then developed. George Kittle, 5th-round pick. Debo Samuel, 2nd-round guy. Now, Brandon Ayuk, they traded up 4 in the first round. But then Brock Purdy, 7th-round pick. Last pick of the draft. Pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, it's really stunning that all but one of them are homegrown.
Yeah, and then you trade a bunch for McCaffrey, who everybody knew he was a star. So,
yeah,
I don't have any more superlatives about the 49ers offense. It's really good.
No, it's really
good. And the numbers reflect it.
It's really good, and the other thing I point out, the Brock Purdy's finish, 4,280 yards, 31 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 2 rushing touchdowns.
I think if I went back and pulled the tape, that's the exact stat line you had for him before the year.
Yeah, I said 4,300 yards, 33 touchdowns.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah.
Good call. Good call by you. Yeah, so Purdy also set the 49ers single-season franchise single-season passing record of 4,280 yards, eclipsing Jeff Garcia's 4,278 back in 2001. So congratulations to Brock Purdy, the 49ers now. That Week 18 game against the Rams is going to look like preseason football. Rams have got their spot locked up. Niners got their spot locked up. they're playing for the postseason on Sunday. That should be an entertaining one to watch. All right. The Kings also got after it this weekend. They got a couple of wins. They got a win over the Hawks on Friday. They got a win over the Grizzlies on Sunday. We will dive into some of the fallout from that. There was a lineup change against Memphis. We'll talk about that. There was a trade with OG Anunoby leaving the Raptors and going to the Knicks. We will talk about that. Tons of King stuff coming up. Plus, we'll have a sprinkle of NFL for you as well on the Insiders, sponsored by Jiffy Lube.
You're listening to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome into 2024, the second day of 2024, the first work day of 2024 for us. Want to remind everybody, D'Lo and KC are back this week. want to thank everybody who hung out with me and James. Last week, we were in Wednesday through Friday doing a noon to two show. That was super fun. But now we are back, or excuse me, a 10 to two show. But now we are back into our normal 10 to noon slot. D'Lo and KC will be in beginning at noon. So a big thanks to D'Lo and KC for letting us borrow a couple of their hours last week. That was very nice of them.
Yeah, I'm going to bill them for it later.
As you should.
Yeah. They can have my back for a day after that stretch.
No, if you're good at something, never do it for free. I think Socrates said that. Kings Hawks on Friday. I don't have a ton on this game specifically. The Kings ended up winning by 7. They trailed by 23, as many as 23. 31-8 feels like a lot more than 23 points.
Yeah, it does.
Like looking at the score bug and seeing 31-8 is like jarring.
It was embarrassing. They came out like listless and without any fire at all.
Yeah.
But I think it plays into a larger conversation about Mike Brown looking at what's going on and literally just like having the quickest hook of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it interesting that like he keeps pulling Harrison Barnes and Kevin Huerter. We'll get into the Kevin Huerter situation a little bit later. But like the quick hook, he understands what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what he's got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't sit here and like everyone wants this starting lineup change or that starting lineup change. It's like, okay, well that's not going to help you. And sure. The Kings starting lineup, realistically, it's been really good all season. They're like a plus 11 per 100 possessions. Like they're good.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it feels like they're not, they are.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I thought that, you know, they give up 71 points in the first half. They give up 39 in the second half. And De'Aaron Fox just kind of clowned the Hawks. There was even a point where he started laughing with some fans on the sidelines.
We were wondering on Friday's show, like, man, the Hawks have some good players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are they so bad? They have good players and I think a good coach in Quinn Snyder. He's won a coach of the year, right?
I think Quinn Snyder is a very good coach, right? I'm just confused, though, how it is that Clint Capella dominated the whole first 5 minutes of the game. Just dominated.
Like, yes.
Every time you turn around, he was, like, throwing in a bucket.
Yeah.
And then nothing. Like, they don't go back to him at all. They don't play through him at all. They don't involve him at all. It's like once the game settles in, it's like, okay, it's Trae Young's time and everyone else has to watch, or it's DeJounte Murray time and everybody else has to watch.
Yeah.
Like, how many spin moves do I have to watch? Like, stop spin moving.
So that's my thing with DeJounte Murray specifically. I don't know if he's a good defender anymore. I don't know if he's because he used to be the type of player that you could just throw on De'Aaron Fox. And yeah, Fox is going to get his, but DeJounte Murray is going to make it tough for him.
Yeah.
And he's just not that anymore. So I don't know if it's because of the situation in Atlanta and he's just punting. And I think that the whole my turn, your turn thing that he and Trae Young do, I don't think that would necessarily be the case if Sacramento were to acquire him. However, if he's not going to be any like elite all NBA type or all defense type of perimeter defender, I'm out. Like,
yeah.
The offense would be a bonus to the, hey, here's a very good defender who's going to help you there. Oh, and he can go get you 20 a night. If he's not doing it on the defensive end, I'm out.
Yeah, and I don't think like he would walk into Sacramento and average 20 a night. You're looking at probably, again, at reassessing him as more like a 17-point-per-game guy on a team that actually wins.
Sure. Let me rephrase that. A player who is capable of creating his own shot,
yeah,
and going and getting you a bucket in the mid range. He can shoot the three. He can finish when he gets to the rim. So he's capable of that. I don't think the Kings would need him to get 20 a night. But my bigger takeaway was like, man, he is defensively not what I thought he was.
Yeah,
no,
I'm with you, and I don't know that I would make that investment or I would wheel and deal because you know they gave up 3 picks for him. So I don't know that they're gonna want a lot back in return. Although they're fully open for business. I've had conversations over the last couple of days. The Atlanta Hawks are fully open for business. So when you're that bad, of course they are. So I would say that they could undergo a complete reboot here in the next couple of weeks leading up to the trade deadline.
Yeah, and keep in mind too, this is the same team that wanted to get rid of John Collins for 3 years, and it took him that long to finally pull the trigger on a deal.
No, that's true.
They were just dramatically overvaluing him. So.
It is a tough team to trade for because of that, although the Kings were able to pull off the Kevin Huerter deal with them without any problems. So
yeah, they swung that.
Yeah, they've got some players. I mean, I would still like...
That was with Schlenk, though, right?
Yes, it
was. Yeah, and Travis Schlenk, their former GM, is no longer there.
No. Now it's a strange...
They have the weirdest front office in the league.
Yeah, they have a very strange front office.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm not going
to... You're not going to dive into the fact
that
they hired Grant Liffman from NBC Sports Bay Area to step in. And I love Grant, but like there's some weirdness to that.
Feels like they hired a GM and then went, hey, hire your buddies. Just call your friends and bring them in.
Well, they have the owner's son as part of that.
Right.
Who hired his friend.
Right.
Who then hired his friends. And then they've even hired like a babysitter. So I have another person that I know works there that's kind of like a consultant, but like I think it's a babysitter type situation. Just weird.
Ugh.
Whole thing is weird.
Strange happenings in Atlanta. Maybe not a team you want to deal with. So I've decided ultimately where I land on the DeJounte Murray thing is I'm out.
Okay.
We had and if you missed Friday's show, we talked at length about that, and somebody called in Thursday and dropped that name. We were like, oh, okay, let's dive in. And I'm just kind of out on the idea now.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be like 100% out, but I'm certainly not in. And I think it leads us to like other discussions totally.
What do you mean?
Just because like I think that there's some stuff hidden there that when you start to look at why the Kings are better or why that you're able to make a change at the shooting guard spot and stuff, I think there are some specific reasons that you're able to do that, which I don't think were the same case even last year. And so, yeah. You know, we do have a Jiffy Lube player of the game for that game, right?
Let me get my buttons ready.
We do.
Yeah, tell me, Jay, I'll let you do it. Jiffy Lube, fast break player of the game for Friday's game against Atlanta.
Yeah, it was De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah. So, and finally, De'Aaron Fox wins a player of the game. About time.
Yeah, because that never, ever happens.
That guy steps up and actually does something.
Yeah, so go to ESPN1320.com, hit the giant logo there in the middle of the screen. It says Jiffy Lube. And then what are we doing? Fox? F-O-X?
F-O-X.
F-O-X.
As easy as it gets.
So, but this plays into a different discussion here because...
Real quick.
Yeah.
Enter to win a $100 Jiffy Lube gift certificate.
Oh, yeah. Of course. My bad. Yeah. So the reason why we're giving away a $100 gift certificate from Jiffy Lube to De'Aaron Fox is because he goes 8 of 16 from 3. And the game before that, he went 7 of 15. So in two games, he knocks down 15 three-pointers. He comes back. He hits another three in the win over Memphis. Now, Kyle, I think this... It's an interesting discussion because when De'Aaron Fox is a mid-range shooter and a guy who finishes at the rim and the fastest point guard in the league, defenses have to defend him one way. They go under screens, right? And you need to put alongside De'Aaron Fox three shooters and Domantas Sabonis.
Mm-hmm.
When De'Aaron Fox all of a sudden becomes a 40.3% three-point shooter, and he's shooting 8.9 threes per game, or I think it went down to 8.8 threes per game.
Correct.
After the Memphis game. Now you have different options on who you can start next to him.
Yes.
Fully. It changes what you're doing, right? It changes the whole complexity of your offense. If De'Aaron Fox, I don't love that like a couple of games this week, he had like 14 threes or 16 threes, and he only took 20 shots.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. I need him shooting more than four shots inside the mm-hmm. 3-point range.
Sure.
But if that's what he's doing and he's setting this up, so what I feel like he's doing right now, he's setting up the entire league to say, you have got to defend me at the three.
100%.
And then once they start making the adjustment, then you're going to see him hit the nitro button and be even more undefendable. He's going to start attacking in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just, it's a really, really smart player who is playing out of his mind right now. Mm-hmm. And I think when you see him doing that, it now becomes okay to move Kevin Huerter and his three-point prowess to the bench and put in Chris Duarte, who is a defensive-minded player, mm-hmm. and swap the two out.
And I think, a good defender.
Yeah, he's a good defender. Yeah, what we've seen like right away, he's calmed down. He's settled into his role a little bit where he's not out there like kung fu fighting every single mm-hmm. minute of the game, just right. fouling everybody. But I think a lot of this is Mike Brown is looking around like, okay, did Fox just give me an opportunity here? And yeah. the answer is yes. Yeah, he did.
So he's shooting, as you said, 40.3% from three. That is his career high by 29 points.
Yeah, 0.28, right? Yeah, 0.29. He shot 37.5% 1 year.
On 2.9 attempts.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a lot. That's not very many at all. I saw somebody on I mentioned the other day De'Aaron Fox and he how much better he's shooting it this year, and somebody said, I still think he's taking too many threes. My argument is that if you're going to hit 40%, 8.8 is not enough.
Okay.
I maybe a higher volume, that number like plummets, but man, whatever he's doing from the three-point line, I am in on right now. If he goes through a stretch of 2 weeks where he's hitting 12% or something, and it looks like he's regressing back to kind of the mean of the rest of his career, okay, then let's rethink it. But right now, with how well he's shooting it, I am all in. And I get what you're saying. You don't want 16 of his 20 shots to be threes.
Yeah.
That's probably excessive. But if he's going to take 16 threes in a game and make 8 of them, I have a hard time complaining.
Yeah, like, okay, you're going to win. if all of a sudden he becomes like Steph Curry but with speed.
Yeah.
And like, but I just don't know. Like, I want that. I hope that that's sustainable, right? I really do think that, like, shooting all these threes might be sustainable, but even I think it's like the last, I don't know, like, over his last 11 games, he's shooting 45.3% from three on 9.6 mm-hmm. attempts per game.
Man.
That's wild, man.
That's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, that really is wild.
Especially for a player who coming into this year was averaging 3.8 attempts per game from three.
Yeah.
And shooting 32.1%.
First career. Yeah.
And all of a sudden he's a 40% three-point shooter. So I'm with you. There's definitely an aspect of this. It's like, okay, there's some level of regression coming.
At some point, you would think.
But even still, if he's going to wind up shooting 37, 38% for the year, that's plenty.
But I'm telling you, Kyle, the beauty to what he's doing is the second that he starts to regress, it's going to be because teams don't leave him open.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they don't leave him open from three,
he's going to cook.
It's barbecue chicken time.
Yep.
And shout out to Luke Laux, who has put a tremendous amount of work into helping De'Aaron become this type of player. And mm-hmm. also Rosae Fox, his wife, she has also done the same thing. Like, this has been a group effort to help him become the shooter that he's becoming. Yeah. And hey, let's give a shout out to Keegan Murray.
Why not?
Who sat there and worked with him all summer long, and a long defender. They one-on-one all the time. They're working on each other's games. Like, that's a big deal. Like, mm-hmm. to play against a long, tall, athletic dude who's making life difficult for you. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like, if this is how the Kings are going to be built, it does change everything, because it used to be that you had Fox and Sabonis and neither one of them shoot the three.
Right.
Sabonis is out there, you know, when he does shoot, which isn't enough, he's crushing it still.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, you've got Fox just breaking it out and having this, you know, spectacular season as a three-point shooter. And like, now you get to start tinkering. Now you know you have mm-hmm. a better idea of what it is you need to go get at the trade deadline.
Yeah, and I think it's... watching them, and I this is a little bit prisoner of the moment, and I think that this will change for me over the next maybe week or two, but when you watch them against Memphis and you watch them dismantle that team by 31, and now anytime a team beats a team by 31, they're going to look great and you're going to go, oh wow, this is so... I'm trying not to overreact, but let's overreact.
Yeah.
Why not? It's our job. No, I'm I'm willing to, here we go. Here's how I'm not going to overreact. I am more open to the idea now that the Kings can be more competitive in the playoffs than I thought they could without a huge change to their roster. Hmm. I still think they need to make some changes. I still think they need to shore up their rotation, whether that's a player in the starting unit or not. I'm you know, TBD. But I think they need to still shore up their 8-9 man rotation for the playoffs. But I don't think that necessarily needs to be a starting caliber player now. Because if Chris Duarte going into the starting lineup, and God bless Chris Duarte, good player. But if that small change made you that much better defensively, as good as they were against the Grizzlies the other night, they gave up 92 points. They have not allowed 30 points in a quarter in any of their last six quarters.
Hmm.
They've been so good on that end. And if this is all it took was Chris Duarte into the starting lineup, now all of a sudden, I'm looking at Keldon Johnson, Alex Caruso, a player like that, that we're going, okay, yeah, they're fine players, but I mean, how much better do they make you really? Well, to me, now that could make you a lot better.
Yeah.
If just Chris Duarte is going to make your defense as good as it was the other night, Mike Brown called it the best defensive performance the Kings have had since he's been here. That incredible. That's great. If they continue this trend, now all of a sudden at the deadline, I'm going, man, if you're putting this offense in a 7-game series, that's tough to deal with regardless. But if you now are confident that you can throw out some sort of defensive lineup,
mm-hmm.
that is going to say, okay, maybe they're not as good offensively, but if you have a defensive lineup that you are confident can go get you a stop or a few stops in a row over the course of a few minutes, now that's where, for me, I'm going, okay, maybe you like them in a second round series. Maybe you like what they can do against whoever they face in the conference final.
Okay.
But again, now I need to, remember the game in Brooklyn last year where they kind of grinded out a win against the Nets?
Okay.
And Mike Brown, after the game, I remember, he was like, I'm glad to see that we could win this type of game. We haven't won a game like this all year. You got to win in different ways, blah, blah, blah. Maybe this Memphis game is just that. Maybe they had a really good defensive performance and it all falls apart over the next couple weeks. But I like that foundation.
Yeah, I mean, I totally see, like, the path forward here. Chris Duarte needs to prove that, number one, he can grow into the role. Number mm-hmm. two, he can stay healthy,
because yeah.
that's been an issue. And number three, he can stay out of foul trouble.
No doubt.
And if he can do those three things, I think if he starts to grow into that role and he starts to become, like, a solid, like, he needs to take the three-point shot. Like, he can't sit there and start dribbling yes. every single time. Like, stop Correct. With the dribbling. Like, sometimes you can do that, but it's like he always wants to get in the two-man game with Domas, but he doesn't even want to shoot it in the two-man game. He wants to give it back to Domas.
It's the one-and-a-half-man game.
Yeah, so you're like, what are we doing here? Like, how about you just catch and shoot? But yeah. if he can grow into that role, and even if he shoots, like 35, 36% from three, okay, that's fine.
Make teams guard him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what I'm talking about is, at this point, Chris Duarte is shooting 36.7% from the field and 30% from three. Like, he has not been an impactful offensive player at all.
Mm-hmm.
If he can settle into this role, the role will continue to morph and he'll get more and more responsibilities. By the end of this season, if this is what Mike Brown is going to do, and I'm not convinced 100% that he is going to stick with this. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. Mm-hmm. But there comes a point where if one of your major trade assets is Kevin Huerter, you don't want to devalue him. And so, like, this might be a temporary thing with Kevin's hand. We don't know what's going to happen here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if Duarte does grow into this role, there will come a point where you're going to see him take on the toughest defensive assignment on the perimeter, mm-hmm. and that will allow De'Aaron Fox mm-hmm. to take a breath.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern right now isn't that De'Aaron Fox is going to be able to maintain 30 points a game or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It said that we might get to a point where he's trying to maintain that type of scoring average and his efficiency is going to go in the tank because he's playing 35, 36 minutes a night and he's defending at a high level. You need someone to be able to take some of the pressure off for him in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I think Malik Monk is already stepping up and saying, hey, I got some of that,
mm-hmm.
right? He's taken on this role where he's eating more and more minutes at the as a primary ball scorer, whether it's with the first unit or the second unit. Mm-hmm. He's taking some pressure off Fox, where you can have Fox float around the perimeter and just shoot threes and relax.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get someone to take some of the defensive pressure off, which would be Duarte, mm-hmm. that would be big as well.
Yeah, and then if you can, and this gets back to what I was talking about, if you can throw out a lineup of Fox, Duarte, Keegan Murray, Harrison Barnes in a postseason setting, where that's four defenders now that you feel at least okay about, it's a switchable lineup. It gives you a genuinely really good perimeter defender in Chris Duarte. You have a player like Keegan Murray, who we've seen in spots this year go guard Donovan Mitchell for an entire game. I think that's the first time I've ever gotten that backwards.
Oh, interesting.
Like, I usually mean to say Davion Mitchell and I say Donovan. This is the first time I've ever said Donovan. Said Davion, I meant Donovan. Anyways, where we've seen Keegan Murray take on that assignment. And so if it's Chris Duarte and you get Keegan Murray playing like that, De'Aaron Fox is a very good defender. Harrison Barnes is a fine defender still. If you have those four running around on the perimeter in a playoff setting, like, again, going back to, can you get a stop when you need one? I like that lineup to get a stop.
Yeah.
So, but again, it comes back to what you were saying about Duarte, where the Kings aren't going to play him in a big spot if they're playing 4-on-5 offensively, because the team doesn't feel the need to guard him on the perimeter.
He needs to settle down. Like, mm-hmm. on both ends of the court, we're seeing him settle down a little bit on the defensive end, but on the offensive end, he's still kind of like hopped up. You're like, hey man, just kind of simmer down. You'll be okay.
Part of me wonders if that's because his role has been inconsistent this year. But maybe Mike Brown putting him in the starting lineup, this is like, hey, you're the starting two guard. Go, you have earned that spot. Now go keep it.
Yeah.
Maybe that helps him, where he doesn't feel so much pressure to try and, I don't know, just relax and play.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to Mike Brown tonight during pregame and kind of figure out if that's what his idea is here. Mm-hmm. Because, again, this could be like, well, Herter's dinged up and he needs a break, a mental break.
Mm-hmm.
Or is this like, hey, this is what we're doing now. And if this is what they're doing, that's fine. But I kind of want to have him like say what it is that he's looking for from Duarte. And let's be honest, what are you looking for from Kevin Huerter? Because I think one of the questions in the chatty house earlier was, you know, what does this mean for Kevin Huerter? And the fact is, there are no extra shots in the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. Like, Harrison Barnes has dealt with it all year long. De'Aaron Fox is at 22 shots per game. Domantas Sabonis is taking an extra shot per game. You're seeing a guy like Keegan Murray get an extra couple of shots. Like, those fourth and fifth starters, you don't need them to be like incredible offensive players, but they have to hit the three and they have to at least be competent, mm-hmm. right? If like Duarte's done a nice job with some back cuts and stuff like that, mm-hmm. right? But you have to at least play them. Like, someone has to defend them, because if not, that's when you start gumming up with Sabonis and you start gumming up things for Fox. So yeah. For me, I want to hear Mike say what his plan is. And then again, I think Kevin Huerter might be able to flourish off the bench alongside a guy like Malik Monk, who's setting up people all over the place. Mm-hmm. If he's just floating around as a shooter, he might get his confidence back in that role. And the key is, you don't want to totally devalue him, because like, I think that they are looking for a move, and he would probably be the one that would go if they are looking for a move.
Speaking of moves, I'm glad you brought that up. OG Anunoby got traded. I don't think the Kings necessarily whiffed, because I don't. We'll talk about the package that the Knicks sent and what the Kings could have done to try and match it. But I think that Knicks trade is very, very, or the Pascal Siakam trade, excuse me, the OG Anunoby trade with the Knicks is very telling for what a Pascal Siakam deal might look like. And we'll talk about that next. He's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insiders on ESPN 1320.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader.
dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.